Kia ora and welcome to Paul Matthews.
Hi, Catherine. How are you?
Good, thanks. Chief Executive of CIO Studio and our correspondent today. What's top of your thinking today?
Oh, look, I'm going to start sounding a bit like a broken record here because we've talked about this. It's almost a perennial issue, I think. We talk about it almost every year, but another day, another list of stolen passwords. And, you know, last week it was AA Travel's turn. So they've revealed a huge hack, actually, stealing what really amounts to hundreds of thousands of details about Kiwis, and yet again, reportedly including unencrypted passwords, which really is a big no-no. And, you know, as I say, we've talked about this many, many times. It's still happening, but there's some key things that really need to be done by both the industry and people as well.
Sally now, Forth.
Sorry, go ahead.
Sally Forth, sir.
Yes, so what happened at AA Travel? And again, this isn't new. This is something that seems to happen quite regularly. But in their case, there was a hack to an old website that was still up and it wasn't actually being used anymore, but still public facing and still on the internet. It was the AA Traveller site, and used from about 2003 through to 2018. Now, AA Travel discovered the breach in March of this year, and they've just come out recently with it once they'd figured out how bad it was and what had happened and whether the data had got out, etc. Now, what actually turned out was that all of that data was stolen in August last year. So it's been floating around for a few months before they realised that's not an unusual situation. That happens quite frequently. But as I mentioned at the outset, you know, the big issue here is that it included a whole bunch of personal details, email addresses, and importantly, passwords. Now, the big question is, should they have prevented the hack? Now, these days, you really do have to assume that a password you enter online is going to be compromised at some stage. So these days, you know, every day there are hundreds, if not thousands, of sites that are being hacked, details that are being taken, and you've got to assume as soon as you put something in that somebody sooner or later is going to get access to it. They shouldn't, but that's the reality. And, you know, the fact is that even big players, you know, Dropbox, Microsoft, all of the sort of core ones have had this problem before as well. You know, they can't stop the hackers, so you can hardly really expect that the small folks will be able to either. But to be honest, they're not off the hook. And the reality is that good companies look after your passwords. You know, when you set a password, it's meant to be scrambled at their end. It's a thing called a salted hash, although even salted hashes these days aren't really good enough. But essentially, they make it really, really hard, not always impossible, but really, really hard to turn what they store back into your password. So this kind of idea of having passwords stored in plain text or close to it is really just not good enough these days. Now, what's actually quite interesting about this whole password thing is the trick these days is to not make it impossible, because the speed that computing is accelerating means that's you know, pretty hard in itself, but just to make it quite slow and difficult, so it's more of a hassle for hackers to actually turn it back into passwords than it would otherwise be. But, you know, the real protection is making sure that you use good passwords and different passwords for different sites. The other thing in this case is, you know, really, should they still have had this data? Now, companies should have what's called a data retention policy. Essentially, they should get rid of data that they don't need anymore after a certain period of time. Now, this was an old website. It was not being used anymore. The data was still there out on the internet, ready to be hacked. So really, they should have done a better job of looking after it.
And, you know, that was the question, is what sort of system do you have when outdated data is sitting there? You know, what are your proactive checks and balances on your own sort of system vulnerabilities? Yeah,
that's right. And, you know, I don't want to, you know, they've done wrong here. They shouldn't have done what they've done. It's bad. It's meant that people are compromised. But I've got to be honest, is they're not alone. You know, this is the problem, is it's pretty bad out there. You know, it's really hard to tell who's doing it properly and who isn't. You know, they're meant to be encrypting passwords. They're meant to be taking data off. But the reality is that a lot of people out there don't. So we're talking about AA Travel in this case, but in actual fact, this could apply to a bunch of other companies. And, you know, on the company side, I mean, the reality is that if you're looking after people's data, you have a responsibility to look after it properly. And, you know, when it comes to things like passwords, you know, credit card details, if you're collecting any, you know, driver's license details, those sorts of things. I mean, this stuff is massively valuable for people on the black market. You've got to look after it properly.
All right. And also on your thoughts today.
Yeah, so a little bit disappointed with the budget announcement. Now, obviously, Budget 2022 is being released later today. However, a key announcement for the tech sector was put out ahead of time. And it's got some good news, but it's also got some pretty bad news in there too, if I'm being completely honest. Yeah, the bad news is that skills, after everything we've kind of covered, and we've talked about this before as well, skills are back in the too hard basket for the government. Now, we'll start with a good. So the budget pre-announcement came last Sunday. Minister Clark announced a $5 million per year investment over 4 years to elements of the industry transformation plan, which is good. That's great. Now, if you remember, the transformation plan is a whole host of initiatives, and it's designed to transform the tech sector to really lead New Zealand's economic growth post-pandemic. Now, it actually started pre-pandemic times, but it's really had that focus now of how we're going to drive New Zealand's growth into the future. Now, really central to that plan is tackling the huge mismatch in tech skills and trying to get more of those core skills into the industry, try to get people accelerating a little bit faster in their careers to the areas that, as a country, we really need skills and people to be focused on. So, you know, on the face of it, that's good. But, you know, the problem is that the announcement didn't have any of that. And it was pretty disappointing. So that $20 million investment, it went into two things. It went into a thing called the Tech Story, which is actually really good. It's an initiative to advertise New Zealand as an innovative place for tech, you know, really going out to our key trading partners. A really good initiative. So don't get me wrong, that's it's excellent and really, really needed to change New Zealand's reputation on the world stage. There's also a contribution, to a community called KiwiSaaS, Software as a Service. It's a government-run network group for software companies run by Callaghan and New Zealand Trade and Enterprise. Again, it's a really, really good initiative. They're doing some great things over there, so absolutely not knocking it. But the problem is that's it. That's the sole total of the announcement. So, you know, if we talk about skills, AI, data-driven innovation, procurement, Māori tech success. There's a whole bunch of things that are in there that haven't had a look in. And, you know, if I'm being cynical, I'd have to say that it looks like they've snuck the announcement out ahead of the main budget because really, those really big, audacious, you know, big issues that need to be solved are missing. And it's really kind of missed the dial. Now, as we've discussed previously, you know, hundreds of people, in fact, over 1,000 people across the industry and government worked together to put that plan together. So it's kind of sad that it's back in the too hard basket.
You're not perhaps hoping there might be a last minute big announcement in the budget itself. You're reading the tea leaves here, and this is it.
Yeah, I think if there was going to be a broader announcement around this, it would have come out at the same time. I think, there might be some other stuff that impacts the industry or whatever, but this was really focused on trying to drive the economic growth of New Zealand through the tech sector. It was a specific range of policy initiatives, and I think if they were going to do more in this space now, then we would have seen it as part of that announcement.
They'd have made a fuss today,
Yeah, and having said that, you know, there is a bit of a carrot dangled in the statement. You know, there's some language about potentially looking at some other stuff later. But I also got to say, there's some really kind of odd quotes in there as well around the immigration side of things. And there was a strange reference about immigration being the solution to skills. And basically, the immigration changes will, and I quote, enable businesses to lure skilled labour from offshore, which I mean we can learn from world leaders. And you know, that's all well and true, and immigration's absolutely part of the answer. There's no doubt about it. But you know, the difficulties that we've got in the industry is because there's been this massive imbalance of focus on domestic skills development versus immigration. The two have got to be balanced, and that's really the challenge.
So now go ahead. You carry on.
I was just going to say that we really, yeah, what we don't want is a situation where we just import top talent. We don't develop ourselves. New Zealanders kind of languish without the skills that we need. And that's not really the future that I think the country wants or the industry wants.
That was what your whole industry report was about, only about, you know, less than a year ago.
Well, that's right.
Only minimal amounts of that blueprint have been taken up by the looks of it.
Yeah, and it kind of feels like a back to the future. Like there was a massive amount of evidence that was collected around that. It wasn't just people's perspectives and things found that balance was wrong. We needed to focus on domestic skills development. So it's kind of getting back to the point of saying, oh no, we don't really, we'll just focus on immigration. Just seems disappointing, to be honest.
And also, as we've spoken about in just about every sector going, every country wants the same talent.
Yeah, well, that's right. It's not like this is a problem that's just in New Zealand and the solution is we just buy it in from overseas. You know, the reality is that Australia are luring our best and brightest. England is luring the best and brightest from Australia. It's a big issue that's happening at a global level, and we're not going to solve it by just looking at importing people.
You said there was a carrot, because obviously there's a big spend in this budget, a big focus on climate change initiatives, a big focus on health and the huge costs of completely restructuring the health sector, getting rid of district health board debt. So there's a lot going on today. Did you get a hint that the plan, that, you know, you may have had a minister who went off to fight the case in the run-up to the budget and just, you know, got steamrolled, frankly, by everything else that's going on. Did you see in the announcement that there still is interest, I think you alluded to this, about some other areas of the plan down the track?
Yeah, that's right. And, obviously none of us know the inner workings of cabinet and all that sort of stuff. But the reality is that I do think, you know, having said all of this, that we do have a minister in this space who is keen to see some change. So, you know, I would certainly hope and I would certainly expect that that will happen. Yeah, the people within government that are working with industry on this are absolutely committed. There's some great people working across a range of different areas. And, you know, you mentioned health. You know, health is a good example. There's some real big gains to be had for New Zealand by looking at how the health system works going forward. There's lots of digital stuff that can happen in that space that would make a really, you know, genuine difference to people's health outcomes. So this is a particular thing around skills and a particular thing about transforming the industry. But by and large, we certainly hope that outside this space, there's some key areas that are going to see some good growth.
Yeah, well, that will be the frustration, as it was throughout the pandemic, by a number of our really, really top tech companies whose specialty is health or computers that could be used in the health system. And are they going to sort of, I don't know if they were expecting anything in the budget other than perhaps a strategy that did look more to their own backyard?
Yeah, and I've got to say that, you know, we do have a bunch of health tech companies in New Zealand that are doing a really incredible job on the world stage. They basically get good people where they can find them and kind of just get, just get on with it. But we've got a really good industry here. And it's just, you know, it's just a case of what we want the future to look like and the investment that we need to make now to get there.
Yeah, Tech Week, it feels like it comes around more often than annually, but it is on right now. And what are some of the highlights this year, Paul?
Yeah, that's right. And so it's a bit more positive news, actually, around the Tech Week. We're right in the middle of it at the moment. It goes from last Saturday through till next Sunday. It's bigger than ever, hundreds of events happening across New Zealand. The key thing is this isn't just for people who work in tech. You know, this is really a big celebration of all things tech, you know, a showcase for non-tech people as much as anything else. Heaps of events happening in person, online. You can head out and attend some of those face-to-face sort of meetings or watch it from the comfort of your own home. And they have this thing called Tech Week TV as well. So, if you're not really sure what to watch, you can tune into that and they kind of have like the best of throughout the day as well. Now, lots of talks, pretty much anything you can think about is on the schedule. Lots of stuff about security, obviously. There's probably some things in there about passwords as well. A real passion at CIO Studio around aligning technology and business strategy. Heaps of talks about that. Lots of research research that's actually been happening across the university and polytech sector. So there's some reports about some of the things that have been happening right at that cutting edge. You know, Industry 4.0, if you like buzzwords, is automation, cloud, Internet of Things, all sorts of things that come along with that as well. A couple of key ones that I thought looked really interesting. One of them is if you're in Auckland today, at about 2 o'clock, head over to Pokoranga and check out New Zealand's first autonomous shuttle. So that means it's a shuttle, like a mini bus that drives itself. There's no driver, no steering wheel, no nothing. Now it's up from Christchurch Airport. It's a really quite an interesting thing, sitting in a vehicle that's driving around by itself. The other cool thing about this shuttle is it's actually the world's largest 3D printed vehicle. So it's a pretty awesome. Another one, Palmerston North, and they seem to, Palmerston North, honestly, they're going gangbusters. They seem to be really bringing out the fun and the tech. They've got a digital scavenger hunt all around their CBD, lots of challenges to solve, you know, details as you're solving those challenges about the local industry and about history. You know, for the kids in Palmerston North, the local library is doing drop-in sessions all week to build and program a whole bunch of robots. So lots of things happening there. You know, there's one down south as well in Invercargill that might take the fancy of the adults. It's Bots and Bears, they call it, which sounds pretty good. It's basically robot building for adults, and you can enjoy a beer, wine, or non-alcoholic drink while you're doing it as well. So that's pretty cool. So all of it's at techweek.co.nz. Yeah, check it out. There's heaps of things going on.
Let's just finish with the basic advice on passwords. Obviously, in this instance, if something's been stolen, it's been stolen. If it's from an out-of-date database, that shouldn't have happened, but it did. But just to protect yourself in case you ever are, and so many people are, on the receiving end of this hack, what are the real things to remember to make sure that a password you use to use a travel website isn't also the password you use for your banking, for example?
Yeah, that's right. And this is why it matters so much. Like, you might think, well, what does it matter if a hacker gets your password to an old travel site that's not used anymore? You know, the problem is that too many people use the same password on different websites. So you know, we shouldn't, but the reality is we do. And that's why it's on the industry to really look after people. But, you know, changing that behavior is the best thing we can do to protect ourselves. So you shouldn't use different passwords on multiple sites. You know, that used to be quite hard, trying to remember a different password. You might have 20 or 30 sites that you log into. These days it's really easy. So you can use a password manager like LastPass or 1Password's another that will create a unique and really, really tough password for every website you visit. Now, you know, interestingly, you know, example of where this goes wrong, there was a huge hack at Dropbox. I think we talked about it a couple of years ago, actually, but it came about because an engineer at Dropbox actually used the same password for his work account as he'd used on LinkedIn. Hackers managed to hack LinkedIn, get his password, and the rest is history. They're into Dropbox. They got in and they got a whole bunch of data from that. The other thing, just quickly, two-factor authentication. People kind of see it as a little bit of a pain. It is a bit of a pain. It means when you log in, they send you a text or you use an authenticator application or something like that. But essentially, a way to authenticate that you're actually you over and above using your password. And, you know, it might be a bit of a pain, but you should turn it on wherever it's available because it makes a massive difference. Now, just saying as well, I've put a bit of a blog post up about this. So if anyone does want to see the links to that sort of stuff or read a bit more information, ciostudio.nz, and then click on the blog link. Another site, haveibeenowned.com, will tell you whether your email address has been found in one of the big sort of recent hacks as well. So yeah, there's lots of information about protecting yourself, but it all comes back down to changing our behaviour.
Paul, thanks so much. Paul Matthews, tech commentator.